Welcome into the BBP. This is the Bengals Beat Podcast presented by Inquirer Sports. Here, your Cincinnati.com Bengals beat writers, Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, invite you beyond the headlines and inside Paul Brown Stadium for the scoop on all things Bengals. Find out the insider news as well as listening on conversations with players, coaches, and others relevant to the club. Remember, you can subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. Just search Inquirer Bengals Beat Podcast. And as always, you can listen on our free Cincinnati Inquirer Bengals app. If you don't have the app, well, I suggest rectifying that situation immediately in the App Store. Now, if you're down with BBP, let's go. All right, welcome back to the latest edition of the BBP. Paul Diener Jr. and Jim Ossarski, your Bengals beat writer for Cincinnati.com. And here we are in the same room.
Yeah.
Because we're in the draft room. We're in like the draft war room right now.
Yeah.
With the big podcast box.
The big box?
We're in the big room. It's draft is near, so we're beginning to get everything together. We've got our big position by position series coming. We just knocked all those videos out for everybody. Lots of good stuff coming.
It is good stuff.
That's all we do. We just do good stuff. you keep telling us that.
Yes.
Feel free to.
Yeah, thanks for listening. Shouting us out on Twitter and all the socials.
Dude.
Hashtag BBP.
Feel free to drop some reviews in the BBP on iTunes.
Yeah.
Tell us how great we are there. You can tell us how great we are anywhere, really,
yeah.
If you want to. Or if you think we suck, then, well, get in line. All right. Let's little preview of today as we are getting – I went over to Pro Football Focus. You know, we've done all these videos with them, and during the season on the Deuce, we have the PFF convo, which was with a number of different guys over there, the main guy being Steve Palazzolo. So I went over there and did a podcast with them this week. So we're going to have that for the back half hour of this week's BBP. Good stuff. Me, Steve Palazzolo, Mike Renner, their top college analysts, talking about what their numbers. They went off in their draft guide.
Yeah.
I mean, it is like 500 page spider charts. Yeah. We talk a lot about our love of charts. Charts and graphs, man. So there, a lot of really good stuff is going to be coming in the back half hour. Myself with those guys at PFF. Highly
really,
recommend.
I'll give those guys credit, Paul. They've really transitioned and transitioned their product a little bit to answer a lot of the questions and criticisms levied their way by coaches and players over the years. And I think this draft guide, at least to me, is sort of a user, but also someone who's not as into that part of the game as you are, to be like, wow, like these guys really stepped up to the game. So I give them a plug. I mean, they've helped us out over the last couple of years, but they deserve it.
Yeah, they do deserve it, and they've really gone full on in the college game. So a lot of good stuff over there. Check that out if you can, and of course, they'll have more plugs of all of that coming up in our section in the back half of this podcast. In the meantime, we got a couple other things to go to. We're going to be talking about the defensive draft. What are we looking at on the defensive side of the ball? We're going to run through all those positions. Of course, last week it was teased. We didn't get to it. We will get the John Brown story today, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I'll try to keep it tight, too.
Keep it. You got it. Sometimes you got to.
Yeah.
But people, I think people are okay with the long version. We've really talked this up.
Yeah,
it's really
be
it's been built up a little too much. We probably built it up a little too much. I honestly don't know what it is. I'm curious as well. I'll be here with bated breath. Of course, we'll find out why Jim's mad and then get to the PFF guys. So, all right, off the jump, let's do this and talk about the defensive draft. We'll start with defensive line. Everybody knows the Bengals need a pass rush help. It has not been a secret. They are looking for somebody who can come off the edge and get to the quarterback. They have not been near the top of the league in sacks in a longer time than people realize. It's really been about 3-4 years since they have been able to consistently get to the quarterback. And that's with Carlos Dunlap and Geno Atkins as Pro Bowlers on their line.
they need help. They need guys who can come off the edge. So you start thinking, okay, well, number nine, right? Here's an interesting – I mean, a lot of people know this. Some don't. The Bengals under Marvin Lewis have never selected a defensive lineman in the first round. Not once. The last one in franchise history was Justin Smith in 2001. If there's ever a time, this is the one.
Right. Yeah, the minor move they made just prior to recording this podcast, you know, acquiring defensive end Chris Smith from Jacksonville doesn't really fill this hole or change these things. He's a guy who spot guy, 4.5 career sacks. Actually, his first half sack was against Andy Dalton way back in 2014. So that doesn't change this. So we'll get that out of the way. Obviously they like something about him. They saw something on
take
film.
Take a shot on a guy, conditional 18 pick.
They say, you need 90 when you open camp up. So, and real quick on that end, Paul, what do we always talk about? Stop signing 32-year-old guys.
Yes.
Kevin Minter at linebacker in his prime, and here's another fourth-year guy, 25 years old, not a lot of tread on the tires. Look. We've called them out for not doing these things. They've done it. So we don't know what Chris Smith is, but at least it's a departure. But you're right, though, Paul. I defensive line is interesting because I think, and maybe here's how you feel about this. Do they feel or have they felt under Marvin that along the way, the lines of linebacker, like we can get the guys we need later. We don't need to go high on a pass rusher because we are smart and we know how to coach and we can see what cannot be seen, and they've had success. But again, Carlos Dunlap was drafted a long time ago. Michael Johnson was drafted a long time ago.
Yes.
Geno, a long time ago now.
They have not had success in recent years, and much the same way that we talk about this entire team taking a step back because these picks have not panned out. The same can be said about the defensive line. Marcus Hunt, Will Clark, injuries along the inside guys, whether you're talking about Andrew Billings or Marcus Hardison, guys that were supposed to be the next generation of this defensive line have not panned out in recent years, or at least have not had an impact yet. And so they've got to start getting those guys, and the best way to do that is to finally invest. I mean, Marvin Lewis talked about at the owners' meetings, he was making a comment talking about, I don't even know what he was talking about, but he was talking about positions he may have even been discussing when I was asking about the guard. But listen, if you're not getting to the passer, it doesn't matter what's going on defensively at any other position. It doesn't matter if you have linebackers, and it also doesn't matter if you have corners. There's certain positions that you have to be able to have success in, and that is more, and I think as the league has moved over the last, four or five, however many years, further and further and further into this full-on passing three-wide, wide-open game, the Bengals, I think, view the position differently now. And I wrote about that in the prototype story, and they're not necessarily stuck in the 6'6", 290-pound, 4'3", defensive end. And it's the case, and I think their willingness now to use number 9 on a pass rusher or even 41 or even both because they realize they just don't have it now, and it's a part of what's killing them defensively.
Yeah, and to that point, Paul, I mean, Adam Jones was exposed early last year with the double move, right? Emmanuel Sanders, Demaryius Thomas, let the whole world know. Right, and then early Terrence Williams spun Adam Jones around a bunch. I mean, Drake Kirkpatrick's had his issues, but look, you can't get to a double move in a route if the quarterback is already broken off and having to run. So I mean, it's one of those things where that's always a front to back chain, always, and then occasionally if you can get really good coverage, you can go back to front then. But you're right, Paul. Look. At number 9, we've beaten on this drum for a while, is just that guy, whoever it is, needs to be able to make an impact immediately. So even if it's Derek Barnett and he only comes in, I go back to Lovie Smith's Super Bowl year in 06 with Chicago, right? You can name one Hall of Famer, Brian Urlacher, and a lot of other Pro Bowlers at that time nationally. The sort of the forgotten guy was a rookie defensive end named Mark Anderson, who had 10.5 sacks and was just a terror. And all he did was come in on third downs, clear pass rush situations, went to New England. I think he had – maybe I'm thinking of Roosevelt Coleman, but it doesn't really matter. I mean, like, that guy made that impact as a pass rusher, as a rookie, and I think you can work that guy in. And I don't know, probably the more I've thought about this, I was a receiver guy early. I even was thinking O.J. Howard maybe. I was on that boat, but I don't know. We talked about it, Derek Barnett or bust. I don't know. I see pass rush and maybe even Reuben Foster again, even though I have some injury concerns with him.
Yeah.
I just think you need that front seven needs something early.
You know, the Bengals clearly are all about valuing premium positions in who they re-sign and who they use first-round picks on.
Right.
There are certain positions that they just view as premium, important positions. Now, we talked about last week, tight end is one of those that you wouldn't think, but clearly they do value it more than other teams do,
yeah.
Even though most teams in the league don't, the way that they've picked. And that's all we can go off. They have not valued this, but I absolutely do believe they do value it way more now, and it is a much bigger need now than it has been. And you have the perfect setup of Michael Johnson as a mentor and the need to get instant impact on, even if it's just on a third down pass rush guy to come in and then occasionally play other downs,
right,
but mostly come in for the first year. And that's exactly how they like to do it. It sets up so perfectly. It doesn't mean for sure, but that they will take a first round. But this goes into a few other that we've talked about. If they don't have a pass rusher by the third round, they have made a massive mistake.
Yeah,
and they're going to pay for it because there's no other way to get healthy at that position left.
No,
this is it. You either are getting, and I would say a third rounder is probably not going to have a huge impact this year.
I think it's got to be
one. It's got to be 9 or 41.
Right,
and if so, they back the. This is sort of like receiver last year, right? Where we said if they don't get a receiver at 24. Then they back themselves into a corner in the second round of having to take somebody. Yeah. Now, we'll argue in the long run whether that worked out with Tyler Boyd, but they really didn't have much choice at 55 last year. They needed a receiver so badly, and they had to pluck Tyler Boyd as really the last of those top guys.
Yeah,
I think they're backed into that corner again this year with pass rusher because they need it so bad. And maybe this Chris Smith trade is part of them getting a little nervous about what if we don't.
Right.
What if we end up going tight end, linebacker?
Right. Because again, Paul, it's funny because whether it's on Twitter, but even just running into people on the street or family or friend, people around the country who follow other teams, and what will the Bengals do? Who will they pick? And it's like, I don't know. Because they have stuck so close to their board and they don't stretch. Which is to their benefit. I think you need that discipline. I think league experts, if you will always give them credit for that. You know, honestly, it's funny. Marvin Lewis on our last BTS, Paul, do you remember he made that joke where he said, hopefully two or three of these quarterbacks prove themselves to come up. And clearly that hasn't happened. It's fascinating because it seems like teams are wanting to move down. I think the Bengals would entertain that. But what happens if you get a corner, a D end, a tight end, a safety, a D tackle, and then maybe a running back? All going, you hit almost 7 of 11 positions.
Yeah,
7 of 22. You know what I mean? It'd be fascinating to see what they'd actually do at 9.
Yeah,
if the top guys go.
And you try to keep playing this out in your head, and what if this and that. And then two trades happen, and everything that we've spent all this time talking about is completely changed.
Right.
Whether it is somebody trading up for a position that you didn't think of, whether it was for the tight end or for Fournette or for a quarterback or anything. I mean, it happens every draft.
Right.
Every draft you see somewhere in there, teams make trades because they want a certain guy, and especially in a draft – well, you know, most people are saying they want to trade out. Well, you view it as there's 6, 5 to 7 top guys, and then there's everybody else.
Right.
So what, you don't think that people would be trying also to trade up if they feel like one of those top guys is still there? You know, and if at that point, are the Bengals considering trade down? I don't know. There's that's what makes the draft great.
Right.
Is there's so many options, and particularly when you're drafting high, there's so many needs.
Right, and I think to bring in the entire defense of look here, Paul, and we talked about this, and you guys will see this coming up in our videos, but, you know, Duke Tobin, you know, is honest. Especially, look, and he came out in the combine. He was on camera in front of all of us and was like, if Ed Reed's there, I'm taking him. If Darrell Revis is there, I'm taking him. Whatever that goofiness is, other than O.J. Howard and maybe Leonard Fournette, I just see too many defensive players
yes.
that could really help this team in 2017. Now, it might require some creativity from Paul Gunther if it's a corner or if it's one of those elite safeties. But let's be honest, Paul, for a team that didn't really take the ball away, didn't really create plays, maybe some creativity is needed.
Yeah.
In 2017.
Yeah, it probably is. I want to talk about Reuben Foster real quick, who's a guy who has been linked a lot to the Bengals, and that has lessened
yeah.
recently. I think the signing of Kevin Minter and the Bengals' discussion of really like him. I mean, they wanted him to a multi-year deal.
Yeah.
I think that tells you a lot about what they feel like they view the inside linebacker position to look like. Vontaze Burfict's in the last year of his deal. Maybe
yeah.
they'll give him an extension. But so at the end of the day, even though they wanted to get Kevin Minter to a long-term deal, and they probably want to get Vontaze Burfict to a longer deal, they have two guys in the last year of their contract here
right.
on their hands.
Your
two starters. And then whatever your other guys are who are
right.
a bunch of other guys. So
respect those guys, Paul.
You got to respect them and their names.
Yes.
And so you need to know that maybe they'll turn into something.
Yeah.
We don't know about Nick Vigil and the other guys.
Yeah.
So, Reuben Foster at 9. We talk a lot about value of premium positions. I don't see this as a premium position to Bengals value. They have never really invested
no.
high in line. Ray Maluga in the second round is the last time they picked a linebacker in either of the first two rounds. And granted, we just went into this whole thing about
they haven't had one workout since.
In defensive
really.
Ends, we used to do that whole thing about how they haven't drafted any of those guys. Well, yeah, but linebacker is also a position that's being phased out,
right?
Not one that's becoming more important as defensive
right.
end is the case. So to pick another as great as Reuben Foster is, and he's a three-down linebacker. I feel like there's some discussion out there whether he can, you know, actually I get to the end of this with the PFF guys, whether he can truly handle coverage in
yeah.
the league, but he can do a lot. Some people think he's a top five player in this draft. I don't know that that's one where the Bengals are going to go, just knowing the direction of the league, the direction of moves they've made, the way they
right.
discussed Ray Maluga essentially is a dinosaur.
Yeah.
And not comparing these two, but you know what I'm saying, with the position and other needs, I don't know that peg goes in this hole.
Yeah. It's interesting, Paul, because that's the thing with you're right. Foster was hot early, the Minter thing. And honestly, Paul, if Kevin Minter would have signed for 3 years, that would have gave them some security if Vontaze Burfict didn't resign
mm-hmm.
or if they didn't want to extend him. You know what I mean? So I think there was like a dual role there. It wasn't just because they didn't want to draft a guy. Here's the thing, I'll ask you this. We know about the corner class. We know that you can get a pass rusher who you believe in third round. If you pass, let's say things break in a weird way and Reuben Foster's there at 9 and he's kind of like BPA when you're looking at it, or it's a receiver. Can you pass? Can you find your linebacker in the fourth round again, which they haven't been able to do? You know what I mean? Like I haven't really heard this linebacker group is so great in the fourth round you can find a guy who – I mean, what are you looking for then?
Right.
I mean, you've got – it's Minter, Burfict, you feel good with. Vinny Ray, you feel good with as sort of your super sub. Who's Nick Vigil? P.J. Dawson already cut, brought him back. Marquise Flowers is still unknown. I mean – do you feel good about that?
No. No. I mean, you need to insert some help somewhere, but I think this feels like one where they go along their traditional path
yeah.
of trying to make a linebacker happen.
Yeah.
which by the way, that path is riddled with dead bodies.
Has not really worked.
It has not worked out. The whole "we'll get a linebacker" thing has not worked out. So I don't know how that will go specifically.
Corner. Corner for you, Paul.
Yeah. Let's just go
and get that. And you know what? Same day, pick up Quez's option.
Yeah, right. So all the corners. I want eight corners. And I only want two of them to play. Yeah. I mean, just there's a lot of money.
I'm just trying to rile you up.
Yeah, I know. It's just, I don't know. I get it. Corner is a very important position. But how much backup do you need?
Right.
When you have other positions.
Here's the thing.
I don't see it.
And maybe we can save this for the week of BBP. With another teaser, I'll leave it up to you. Because I do think trading down is a possibility, A. But B, Sidney Jones.
Yes.
I mean, we got into this with Jalen Smith a couple years ago. I think that it was different then because of what his injury was. And Achilles is scary, but not. It's not like basketball.
When you're young.
You can come back from this. And here's a guy who was a mid-first-round talent. And if Joe Mixon's already gone at 41. Or
Sidney Jones could be a third rounder when you start talking about people being scared of Achilles and wanting instant impacts.
Right. So I just wanted to float that out there as well as sort of
love it.
You know, BPA stat. You want to talk about a guy you just put on IR right away. You don't even have to worry about the roster being in flux.
Yeah. In our series coming up, I have him listed as my best Bengals fit for that reason. He fits multiple. There's a couple guys like this in this draft where you could stash. You basically stash him for a year. We were already wondering where these 11 guys are going to go. You can stash him on and do the long PUP thing that we've seen them do a number of times. Cedric Obuehi, yada yada yada, and be ready to go next year when you have maybe Darquez is gone and who knows what's going on with other guys.
Right.
When you know more, it seems like a nice snug fit and a thing that this club has done before and getting good value at that spot.
Right. Especially getting that, to me, screams like here's what the comp pick is for. Like we have a third rounder that we kind of peg and that's what here's the freebie.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Yes. So I think that's certainly would make a lot of sense late in day two during day two to see that. And third round I think is fairly ideal. Safety, we've talked about this a little bit in the past. Safety to me is a non-starter unless it's Jamal Adams or Marshawn Latta, or I'm sorry, excuse me, Malik Hooker, the other Ohio State guy. If it's not one of those two guys, I see no need to add. They like what they've seen from Clayton Fedgerlin so far. They like what they've seen from Deron Smith. Those guys feel like solid backups. They have invested in the long term in Sean Williams and George Iloka. So, unless you're talking about Ed Reed or Troy Polamalu, who are sitting there at nine, I don't think there's any reason to touch that room with other needs.
No, I mean
that the whole draft.
Yeah, and I think you're right there, Paul. Just hearing from friends, colleagues covering the Bears, it seems like Adams is the guy the Bears have kind of zeroed in on. Not so. I know Allen, the big D tackle, was a look for them. So he may not be there. Hooker is an interesting one. And again, Paul, this goes back to me. I want points. I want touchdowns. Draft a fast guy to run and go get it. But that's me being selfish. You're right. I think if the best player available is a safety.
It'd be so Bengals.
But then make it I guess my thing with that, Paul, is then if you do that, let me see in action what Marvin Lewis has preached since his season-ending press conference, which was, it's on us as coaches. We need to do better. We need to pull out talent quicker. If you draft a safety who could be Ed Reed, right, because that would be that's what we would ask Duke Tobin on the next day, Marvin Lewis. Yeah. You drafted a safety. He must be what you think is going to be an all-pro.
You must think he's Ed Reed.
So if that's the case, he has to see the field.
Yes.
So
we said
let's see what it looks like.
Number nine needs to play.
Right.
Whatever it ends up being, number nine needs to play. No stashing, We'll let him work his way in. He's a top 10 pick.
Right.
He needs to play, and that will have reverberations throughout the entire defense if it is either of those guys. I don't think either of those guys will be there.
No, I don't think so.
I don't think that's even going to be an option. But if it does, you never know what happens on draft day. I would be very, very, very interested to see if the Bengals pulled the trigger on a position that they're still set at. All right, that's the defense. We have run through the defense. PFF is coming up momentarily. Do you want to make people wait longer for the John Brown story and bring all this in after the PFF? You want to bring him back, or do you want to do you want to get to him?
You're directing the ship, man.
All right. We teased the PFF guys pretty good early. Let's hit the people with the PFF.
Let's give it to them. Okay, so Steve Pelizzolo, Mike Renner, over at the PFF editing bay. We were in the editing bay for this one. So enjoy. It's about 25, 30 minutes conversation with these guys. Then we'll come back, find out why Jim's mad. We'll get the John Brown story, all kinds of good stuff, and we'll get out of here with some music. So we'll be right back. All right, now welcoming into the BBP, a very special edition. This will be the first PFF direct appearance on the BBP. We've done so many videos together, and I've put those videos into the BBP, but I'm actually sitting in the room. This is the long-form version with Steve Pelizzolo and Mike Renner from Pro Football Focus, both senior analysts. Who's more senior?
I'm more senior. I've been here. I was class of 2011 recruiting class. What year were you?
I was 2012, so yes, you got me by a year.
Plus, I'm a lot older than you in general.
Yeah.
And I have better hair, so I'm more senior.
You do have better. You do. You have.
I'll call the hair a tie.
I mean, I don't know. I think that's up in the air. I mean, your hair is more. I think it's more noticeable, but that doesn't make it. Doesn't make
more
it
more noticeable than the guy who hasn't had a haircut in what, a year?
9 months.
It looks
Nine
like months. You're trying to go mullet style.
No, it's like really long on the top too. If I take my head off,
this is an interesting look.
Style to
wow. If this was a video podcast, it would. I don't know.
So, is there a haircut coming in the near future? This is
I'm probably going to try to make it a whole year without getting it, just to see.
It's good to know. Well, we're not here. I mean, we can talk analytics of hair.
It's not what we're here for.
If we want to, but it is not what we're here for. We're here to talk a little bit about the Bengals draft. And, you guys have – I want to make sure you make quick mention of this right away. Your draft guide is out, and everybody has access to it. This is an incredible in-depth look at everything draft. I mean, you talk about numbers. I mean, there's lots of different options for people to download. They get it as a PDF now, right?
Yeah, it's a PDF and – online component. You can just log right in online and get these stats that we've never put on the web before on the entire draft class. Pretty incredible.
Yeah, it's awesome. You guys do a ton of work. I mean, you guys have a team that works year round just on college, and then everybody kind of comes together, I guess, for this time of year.
Yeah, we turn, all of our analysts, we have about 300 part-timers. We take a big chunk of those guys, turn them toward the draft. We have guys writing profiles, collecting more data, and just trying to make sense of all of the data that we collected and, try to organize where do we think these guys are going to slot in the draft.
Yeah. So let's kind of start there. I just want to talk about a few things. Now, you have your own mock drafts. Mike, you have your own mock drafts. There's like the overall draft guide on the site. There's a lot of different opinions.
Yeah.
Based off of these stats. So I just want to kind of run down a few, because when we start talking about the Bengals are looking at it nine, particularly on the defensive side of the ball, I'm surprised. I see a lot of times Solomon Thomas is up there at two. People are saying Niners at two. You guys on the site have not had him up as high as other places. What have you guys seen of Solomon Thomas that you're maybe not as high on him as some others are?
Yeah, I like Solomon Thomas a lot. He won our award, PFF College Award, for the best run defender in all of college football last year. So, we like him quite a bit. Unbelievable against the run, but he was a good pass rusher. I think my question is, where's his fit at the next level? He played on the interior at Stanford, but he's about 270 pounds, about 6'2". So is he more of a 4-3 defensive end, base defensive end type that's going to kick inside and rush from the interior, kind of like a Michael Bennett? And if he does play like a Michael Bennett, I don't know if he's going to rush the passer as efficiently as Bennett, who's one of the better interior rushers in the entire NFL. So to me, that's not really a top 5 type of player. It's maybe a top 10, top 15 type of player in this draft. Mike, I don't know if you would agree. You might like him a little bit more than me, I think, maybe from a pass rush standpoint.
Yeah, but I think he has some pass rush potential. I think the skills are there. But like you said, he legitimately has positional concerns in terms of where he's going to slot in the NFL because his body type is that of a 4-3 defensive end, but at no point in his college career did he actually play in that role. So that's worrisome when he's not actually going up against tackles. He's going to have to, if he does go in the NFL as a 4-3 defensive end, he's going to have to beat tackles, which he's, you know, he's always beating up on guards, beating up on the inside shoulder of tackles, but you have to win the edge once you get to the NFL if you're going to be an effective pass rusher. So can you, are you going to play him inside every down at 272 pounds? I'm not sure.
Yeah. You know, one guy, I think, when you talk about what you've seen, and I find this interesting because you guys live off the tape and off of production, and maybe you don't go get in as much into, you know, the how fast the guy runs or whatever. It's what did they do? How did they play? And Derek Barnett is the absolute epitome of that argument this year, where he did everything on the field that you would ever want a guy to do. He's as productive as anybody. I mean, you're breaking Reggie White's records, for God's sakes. I mean, you're just talking about unbelievable production. You guys have him. I've seen him. I believe he's number 3 overall on your draft board, and a lot of people wouldn't necessarily have him that high because, well, he didn't, you know, his combine is not, doesn't jump off. He doesn't have all those measurables that you want, so can't, how does he translate to the next level? But production-wise, what you guys saw, why are you so high on him, and is it basically strictly just the fact that you just can't deny what he did on the field?
Yeah, I think it's the on-field. I mean, we look a little bit at the combine stuff and everything, but that's more to confirm what we saw on tape. I knew that he wasn't going to have a great combine. I knew that Myles Garrett was going to have a great combine, so that wasn't really an unexpected deal when Myles Garrett broke the combine and Barnett, you know, just wasn't great from a change of direction or explosiveness standpoint. But when you see the on-field production, Myles Garrett versus Derek Barnett, they both came into school at the same time, 2014. They were both true freshmen, stepped into the SEC and played like veterans. They were unbelievable, both of them. And then on a, you know, from a you know, 1-2-3 year deal, freshman, sophomore, junior year, both of their production levels just about the same. And Barnett got even better as a pass rusher as he got older. And it was one of those things where, a lot like Joey Bosa last year, just because he doesn't have this classic look. I mean, Garrett has this perfectly chiseled edge rush look. I mean, if you were trying to design an edge rusher, it's Myles Garrett from an athleticism standpoint, everything. Barnett doesn't have that, but he has that production that's at that level. And he has the production that's at this elite level that we've seen in the PFF system. No matter what the guy is athletically, it's pretty much translated to the NFL. So I think he's going to be a very good NFL player. I still think Garrett's a little bit better, but I think Barnett knows how to beat blocks, knows how to win to the edge, knows how to bend a little bit. It doesn't always look pretty, but he gets the job done and consistently got the job done for 3 years in the SEC.
Not to put you on the spot, but what are some of those comps that you've seen as far as this kind of production at that level going to the – it's from the past. Is there – have you guys kind of looked at some of that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, just more intuitively, we haven't, you know, say, thrown it into a spreadsheet necessarily, but Joey Bosa is a guy that last year at this time, people were overthinking because he doesn't have that Jadeveon Clowney, Myles Garrett type of look, and people said, well, he doesn't bend enough, he doesn't turn the corner enough, and he went out into the NFL this year and dominated as a rookie. And his 2 years that we have of grading, he was the top-graded edge rusher in the entire nation. So once you get up to, like, a certain level in our system, like above 90 overall in our 0 to 100 system, those guys generally translate. So it's Joey Bosa. It's on the interior. You have a guy like Grady Jarrett from the Falcons who went in the fifth round who we said, no, that's a first-round player. Trey Flowers from the Patriots, we just saw him have an excellent season, and he had a first-round type of production grade. Henry Anderson from the Colts went in the third round, and when he's been healthy for about a year and a half out of his 2 years in the NFL, he's looked like a very good player too. So there are certain guys that they just hit this production level in our system in college. So far, we only have 3 years of data, but once they get to the NFL, no matter what they are athletically, they've pretty much translated.
Yeah, I think people want to, when you're drafting an edge rusher in the top 10, top 15, you want them to look like, you know, a Von Miller. You want them to have that sort of burst. You want them to be a speed guy, because everyone thinks that's what translates to sacks, that's what translates to production in the NFL, but the fact of the matter is there's more than one way to win as a pass rusher, as a run defender, than just that simple high-end athleticism, and I think that gets lost on guys like Barnett.
Yeah. Some guys just know how to beat blocks, too, and that was like that was like Henry Anderson a couple years ago.
Coordination is a
thing. Yeah, if you just use your hands well, if you just know how to beat blocks, and for us it's just the quantifying part of it. If you win that many reps – over time, there's probably an element of it that's going to translate to the NFL.
Especially when you do it in the SEC. It's not like you're doing it at Villanova, like my favorite guy that I can't pronounce his name correctly. I've tried to
Passignan.
Tano.
Tano. Zeno Passignan.
You know, it sounds so easy when you say it.
Obi Melifonwu. What else we got here? I've been saying these names for months now.
You know, when you do it at that level and as consistently as Barnett did at that level, it's a lot more convincing too. Because
right.
I mean, those are literally the guys he's going to end up facing when you get there. Although you get the SEC's overrated guy who always shows up.
Not in the trenches. It's not in the trenches.
And also, all I can do is say, well, the most players in the NFL come from that league. That's all I can say as a retort to that, and that's who's going to be playing against. Another guy I want to get your guys' opinion on is Reuben Foster. Where does he land for you guys in comparison to maybe linebackers of past years? Because I think everybody clearly says he's the number one linebacker in this group, but compared to the grades that you guys have from past years, where does he sit?
Grading wise, I mean, he's right up there with, I think, Paul Dawson and Scooby Wright were the past 2 years our highest graded linebackers, and he's right up there with them just in terms of raw production grade. But then you'd look at athletically and what he can do from that sort of standpoint, and it's night and day between him and Dawson and Scooby.
I mean,
he's just a freak of nature.
As far as where we put them on the draft board, too, like Foster is above.
Like Foster
above
is, to me, it's Miles Garrett and Reuben Foster as the two guys who have actually separated themselves from everyone else at their position to where, you know, if I need an edge rusher, if I need a linebacker, I'm going to be upset if I get the second best at that position, where every other position I feel like there's kind of a toss-up towards the top of the draft board. But those two guys are far and away to me, you know, the elite at their position. And Reuben Foster's he seems like a sure thing to me at this point.
Other than the off-field stuff. I mean, that's the big question. You get sent home from the combine. And the funny thing is, you know, some NFL teams don't care about it. Some NFL teams are like, yeah, I love that fire. He told that, you know, hospital worker off, whatever it was. So I think Foster, from an on-field standpoint, though, loves to take on blocks. He will destroy blocks. His short area quickness is incredible. He will destroy people with the ball. He's solid in coverage. Some of the plays that stood out to me is watching him cover running backs. And, you know, a pretty shifty running back will put a move on him, and he will stay with him. So just his lateral agility, his explosiveness, his willingness to take on blocks, explosive pass rusher. So I think he could do it all. Three-down linebacker in a league that just needs three-down linebackers at this point.
I'd say my only concern, he's 6 feet tall. You put him on a tall tight end, that's about the only time I'm going to say, you know, maybe he's a little limited in that situation.
And he got lost in coverage at times. He also tied for the national lead in pass breakups in 2015, got his hands on 7 passes. So we're talking about a guy who, I think when you first watch the tape, you're like, this guy's an elite run stopper. He's going to help in the run game. What's he going to do in the pass game? You see him get his hands on 7 passes in 2015. I thought that really stood out as well, though.
Yeah, that's the knock that I've heard, particularly when we talk about the Bengals taking him. You know, is can he cover? Because what are they going to do at that position? They've currently got Vontaze Burfict and just signed Kevin Minter. Both of those guys, their contracts are up after this year. They don't know what they have in Nick Vigil. They've got backup types of Vinny Ray. So there's a lot of questions there, but there seems to be a reluctance from inside the organization to take a linebacker that high in general if he can't do it all. And I think there's a concern of, can he cover well enough in the NFL to hold up? I think that's maybe, if there's something that you're wondering, that you're hanging on with Foster, particularly with the Bengals, that seems to be it.
Well, I think he's far too athletic for the Bengals to actually draft him at linebacker.
Wow.
They seem to not.
There it is.
That's why they don't want to draft a linebacker. There's a much slower guy later in the draft.
Right. It has been their strategy, clearly, for a long time, to believe that they can make linebackers. They can turn guys into linebackers. They don't need somebody who is a top pick, which is, you can see the fact that they've never really drafted anybody that high.
That's a fairly common strategy. The Giants
fans have been begging for that.
There's some teams that just every year it seems like they have awful linebackers and don't seem to care.
I just think the way the NFL is now, and people say, well, the linebacker position's devalued. And I think if it's a Brandon Spikes or a Bart Scott type of linebacker who's just a two-down run stopper that just goes and destroys lead blockers, yeah, those guys maybe don't have as much value as they used to. But if you know that a guy can be out there for three downs, look at the best defenses in the league when – you know, Luke Kuechly's playing at his high level for the Panthers, when the Patriots have a Jamie Collins and Dante Hightower out there. You know, the Broncos have had really good linebackers the last couple of years. The best defenses have these three-down linebackers that can do it all, that can kick out to the slot if they need to, that can play the run, that can rush the passer. And I think if you can find that guy, that's worth a top-10 value. And I think Foster is the one guy that I feel the best about in that group.
And it's so important because there's only two linebackers on the field now anymore. There's no teams, you know, there's no 4-3 teams sending out three linebackers on right. more than one down, it seems like, anymore. So you're playing with two guys and asking them basically, hey, stop the run and the pass.
You got to stop the run in a light box where you don't have as much help. And that's why run stopping, you could say, well, you don't need to be a run stopper. It's a passing league, but you have to do it in a much more difficult environment.
So you have to be able to move. And the movement aspect has gotten even, because you got to play multiple gaps as a linebacker. You can't just fire into your gap as a, you know, like a Brandon Spikes, like you mentioned. So, yeah, I think, and Foster, to go back to it, I think he has all those traits.
And the curious thing for the Bengals is, and there's a couple of guys, another one would be O.J. Howard, in that drafting either Foster or Howard at 9 would send a message to two guys that are hoping to get extensions, and that's Tyler Eifert and Vontaze Burfict, both of whom have played about half of the games the last 3 years for a different number of reasons. So as if every team that picks in the top 10, there's typically fallout and shrapnel that comes off of a pick. There's a couple of people that certainly be watching closely to see if Foster or Howard come off the board. I want to play a little overrated, underrated with you guys, because obviously you guys see a lot of what other people say, and often your tape dictates different grades. Steve, let me start with you. What do you have as who you think is the most overrated player, one of the most overrated players on top of your mind that's out there right now?
I got to start with Cam Robinson. I feel like that's the slam dunk PFF answer, and it's only because you see a lot of people, and it's not everybody, a lot of people think he's a top 10, top 15, top 20 type of pick. I think he has a chance to be a very good player. The flashes are there, the size is there, the look, everything. He's just never played like a top 5 or top 10 pick at Alabama. He showed flashes of it as a freshman. I thought he was going to be, when I saw him as a freshman, I thought this guy is the future top 5 or top 10 pick. But then when you add up all the snaps over the years, just loses too much in pass protection, isn't really that mauling run blocker that people tout him as. Part of it might be an effort level. I mean, I think he really is that guy. And the more our guys watched him, O-line, former O-line coaches that we have employed, a lot of our other analysts, they said, look, you get him with the right coach, could be a stud, but it's still a big risk. So we still have him as a second-round type of player, but we see a lot of people calling him top 10, top 15.
Would he pop into guard more likely, or do you still see him projecting to tackle?
No, I've seen that. I don't think he needs to pop into guard. Yeah. I mean, he's shown he hasn't been a terrible pass protector to the point where you said, okay, he needs to be a guard. But I think you develop him as a tackle. Absolutely. He definitely has the skills to play on the outside.
Yeah.
I'll go with Jabril Peppers. I think he's been very overrated in this draft process. One, he's not even 6 feet tall and about 210 pounds. Everyone was touting his
tightest
linebacker safety, you know, hybrid versatility. At that height, at that size, you're just not playing linebacker in the NFL. I don't care how good you are at taking blocks. And truthfully, he's not that good at taking blocks on. So I don't think he's a linebacker in the NFL. At that point, he's a safety, to which he really didn't play a ton of safety in college. He didn't play that deep role. And so,
and there's a lot of other
guy,
good safeties.
I was
going to
say, you're going to teach a guy in the first round to play a safety position just because you think he's this freak athlete that can, you know, maybe do it even when his testing numbers weren't too freakish. That's just a stretch for me to get on board with. From what I saw from safety, he looks fine. He looks like he could play the position. But, again, safety is not a position I'm taking in the first round a lot. It's just not a hugely valuable position. So him going in the top 20, I just can't get on board with. And I see that in a lot of places.
That's one of those where I feel like he's one of those that only takes one type of guys, where there's one team that believes so much in the hybrid position, the new safety linebacker position, that they feel like they have the next guy who can fill it perfectly, and they're going to want to take it, while where maybe 25 other teams would have him as a mid-second round type pick or something like that.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Kind of reminds me of, who was it, Shaq Thompson, when Carolina went out on a limb to get him in the first round. And they really haven't found a role for him. He's been only playing, I think, fewer than 500 snaps the first 2 years. So we've seen how valuable that position is for them.
500 snaps first 2 years, that's a lot for a Bengals rookie. I mean, you're talking to, like,
perspective.
That's darn near a starter. Let's go with some maybe underrated guys that you guys think that people aren't paying enough attention to, late rounds, early rounds, whatever. Somebody's a little sleeper for you.
Well, I'm going to start Jordan Willis of Kansas State. He's a very interesting prospect only because he had this great production, and you know we're supposed to live and die by the tape here at PFF, and he was our top graded edge rusher last year. Now we went back and we made some excuses, and we said, well, he was playing against Big 12 right tackles, and that's way of adjusting and saying, you know, trying to justify the grade, because on tape there were a lot of things that just didn't look pretty, didn't always get the job done the right way, didn't turn the corner. Some of the stuff that I was saying about Derek Barnett, and we were kind of holding it against Jordan Willis, and then he goes to the combine and absolutely crushes it. The jumps, the agility, everything was unbelievable. So he's a guy that even though on tape it doesn't always look pretty, production was there this past year. You add the combine there, and very rarely will there be a guy that has PFF type of production, that type of athleticism, that doesn't hit. You know, when those two things mesh, good things usually happen. So we feel really good about Jordan Willis, who I don't think gets a lot of first round hype, who we see as a first round type of player. Yeah. At least I do.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with Willis. I'll say another defensive lineman. I think Malik McDowell from Michigan State, the defensive tackle,
underrated?
Is being super underrated right now. I think he's a top 10 sort of talent in this class. Him and Solomon Thomas, to me, are on somewhat equal footing, and I actually like McDowell better because McDowell's actually played outside and inside. He's kind of played the role where he would play in the NFL, to where if he is a base defensive end in a 4-3, he's actually shown the ability to do that as a pass rusher against tackles like Ryan Ramczyk from Wisconsin, like Mike McGlinchey from Notre Dame. He's actually beaten high-level guys and done that. And I don't know about the off-field stuff. I can't speak to that. There's some of that with him, but he's only 20 years old. I mean, this guy has freakish sort of potential at his size and his athleticism. So I'm a big fan of his. I think he's a top 10 talent, and I see mock drafts with him not even in the first round at this point.
You like the Michael Johnson comp that we kind of brought out there? It's not perfectly clean, but the idea that if it's a 6'7" guy that you're putting on the edge, it reminds a little bit of Johnson, probably a lot more pass rush ability, though,
yes.
But probably similar run-stopping potential that Johnson's brought to the table for the Bengals.
Well, clearly the Bengals trying to find answers that look a lot like Michael Johnson and Carlos Dunlap, at least certainly a younger version of Michael Johnson. Another area that I think is an interesting one for the Bengals, because you can't talk about Bengals drafting and not talk about corners, because they're always looking for them, and now you have Adam Jones, who is at the very least getting older, not to mention trouble that has followed him, and Darquez Dennard, who with them signing Drake or Patrick, you have to believe that it's unlikely that they're going to exercise a fifth-year option on him. Don't know what William Jackson III is yet because he was hurt last year. They obviously hope he's going to be good. So I think there's a possibility they still draft a corner. And this draft, you were tweeting something interesting about corners and trading down. There's just so many of them. It seems like – let's just play out a scenario that Marshawn Lattimore is there. It slips, and he's there at 9. This would be a draft where maybe you'd be better off taking somebody different, because maybe the drop from a Lattimore to whatever would be there in the second or even the third round isn't as steep as it is almost every year, probably.
Yeah, I really like Lattimore. I mean, I think if he does fall to 9, that's obviously going to be a tough decision because he's that sort of good. But I think you can find a day one starter in the second and third in the sort of class, and with how much, you know, zone the Bengals play, I think there are a ton of zone corners in the day two and three that would fit in perfectly and that you could plug in right away, if you're especially on a team that you already have probably three guys slated for next year, talking about William Jackson, Pac-Man. So you can pick a guy who maybe needs some work to get some potential for a future season. So if Lattimore is there, I might still go elsewhere, like you said.
It's really an interesting draft for teams that really need corners, and I don't think the Bengals are in that, hey, we need to go get two guys type of mode.
I feel like they'd be able to trade, actually. If you slipped to 9 at that point, that would be a great time to trade back.
Yeah, I mean, I think Lattimore would be worth it at that point, too. I'm a big believer. You need to get three corners in the NFL these days. I'm okay with you getting four. You stock up on corners, because if a guy gets hurt, you need to be able to replace him. The Bengals, not as much, but when teams do play more of that matchup type of style, you want guys that can match up with different types of receivers. The Bengals being more zone heavy, though, I think the second round would be a great place to look at guys like Desmond King of Iowa, great zone player, Chidobe Awuzie from Colorado, another great zone player, Corn Elder from Miami. So this is one of those drafts, I say, from a cornerback position, if you're the Seahawks and you're looking for that long 6'2" type of corner, you have options. If you're the Bengals, the Dolphins, and these other teams that play more zone, you want the Steelers, those guys are available too. If you want a developmental, you know, press man guy, those guys are here. You got corners for all different schemes and styles. And I just think it's a great draft to kind of reshape your secondary, the Bengals included, even though they, you know, spent the pick on William Jackson last year and have spent the picks in recent years on Denard and Kirkpatrick. I firmly believe the way the NFL is these days, you can't have too many of those cover guys.
Yeah, they clearly do as well. I want to give you guys a chance to give me some quick promos of stuff you guys have coming up or that we should watch for over the next coming weeks leading up to the draft. What do you guys have going out that people can check out?
We have all sorts of goodies. I'll start with the draft show that we're going to be doing. We're going to be working with Sports Illustrated on draft night, round one.
Wow.
Mike and I are going to be in our own little studio, is what they tell us, just giving the first round analysis, everything we can do. So it's going to be Sports Illustrated.
I was just going to be.
What are you going to
do? I was just going to be talking about whatever.
we're going to be the hair analysis. There's a lot of downtime in round one, but it's going to be a lot of fun. PFF stats and information powering the entire broadcast. Mike and I will be there over in New York at the SI studios.
So it'll be streaming on SI.com?
It'll be streaming on SI.com. It's all looking forward to it.
Twitter and Facebook too.
I think it's going to be, probably Facebook Live and everything Sports Illustrated. We're going to be promoting that quite a bit over the next few weeks. And then just the draft pass. I really think it is the best source of draft information that's out there. The PDF is over 500 pages of information. We've really upped our game this year, and we're adding even more to it. There's going to be one other iteration that brings more players out there. So we have over 200 player profiles, stats on over 1,000 players that are in this draft class, and truly stuff that you can't find anywhere else. And that's at profootballfocus.com/draftpass17.
Yes, it's going to be awesome. Spider charts.
Spider charts, dude. That was my baby.
All about spider charts.
He makes spider chart of something that had no business being a spider chart in the first place. A simple bar graph would suffice.
I was going through finances with my wife, and I was like, look, honey, here's a spider chart of where we're spending money. And that's what I'm doing here. I'm all spider chart happy.
No, I tell you what, I mean, honestly, it just feels nice to be in your presence. You have no much how I love charts in general. To know someone that has the same. We could see here.
We'll take requests for next year.
I'm telling you, I could honestly sit here and talk about charts and the evolution of spider charts with you for the next 20 minutes. I'm sure that's what our listeners would love.
We'll go page by page on draft pass.
Yeah, the headline Bengals Beat Podcast : spider charts doesn't have quite as much cachet as PFF draft analysis, but I think it would be far more interesting, in my opinion. Hey, thank you guys for joining me. It was awesome talking draft. We'll have to catch back up after the draft and talk about what the Bengals screwed up or got right or whatever they did. I know you're never shy to mention that. So, guys, thanks again for joining me. And everybody, seriously, check out everything at profootballfocus.com. And, hey, stream on SI.com on draft nights.
Come check us out.
Check out there. And then, and come back to Cincinnati.com, too, after that whistle stuff as well. So, hey, thanks, guys, for joining, and we'll talk to you later. All right, much thanks to Steve Palazzolo and Mike Renner and everybody over there at PFF doing an absolutely fantastic job. Again, pick up their draft guide. You got it all. You can go online. I mean, it's just fantastic. So make sure you pick that up. All right, let's start getting close to wrapping this thing up. I want a John Brown story.
All right, really?
And I want it now. The people have wanted it for so long. It's time to give the people what they want.
I think it's funny just because of how John Brown came to everyone's sort of forefront, a year ago. I don't know, was it this time last year? He was signed to a futures. Anyway,
yes.
So the way this worked, I was by myself in the Paul Brown Stadium media room, and now retired PR maven Jack Brennan comes out to say that they've made a move, and they have signed John Brown, kicker. I said, okay. Let's find out who this guy is. Yeah. Well, the problem was, in that particular moment, no one really knew who he was or which John Brown he was. Was he Jonathan Brown?
Yeah.
Was he John Brown? And you think that's the same guy, but it's not, because there was a Jonathan Brown who was a soccer star who went to Kentucky, but then there was a John Brown who played soccer at Louisville, maybe transfer for Kentucky, but we didn't know because the bios were messed up. There was a Jonathan Brown on the Louisville football bio, but he had no stats. So there was this weird moment. So
we don't know who this guy is.
Seriously, there was. It was one of those, and Paul knows this story. I've had some experience with teams and people being duped by, like, fake athletes.
Yes.
So my, like, radar comes up a little bit. Like, wait a minute, there's way too many, like, John Browns on the internet. Like, it was really strange. There was this period. So, finally, so, of course, what do? You got to fact check, right? So, clearly, the Bengals signed a guy. No, he's the kicker from Louisville. I mean, they've seen him. They signed him, right? He's a real person. But, so, I emailed Louisville, and Louisville's like, let me get back to you on this. Yeah. And then it was, I think the email was, the kicker?
Yeah.
With, like, four question marks. So, Louisville was completely blown. Blown!
What?
So, kicker? So basically what ended up happening was, so Louisville ended up, because of this, had to go back and sort of rewrite and redo all of their John Brown bios.
Oh, my God.
Because there were two. He played, like, he was like a soccer star that went to Kentucky, transferred to Louisville for soccer, but then quit soccer to play football, but he never kicked field goals. He was just a kickoff specialist. So he had no stats.
No.
And apparently the Bengals found him on his pro day, but he was almost like a throwaway pro day guy. It was kind of like, yeah, let's let him kick some balls.
Yeah, let him kick. Why not?
Like, you know what? So it was just a 20-minute moment of, who is this? Louisville wasn't sure. Like, really? They signed this guy? Like, it was – and the Bengals, again, signed a real person. They didn't do the whole Bears thing where they checked the wrong box and Warrick Holman went to Kansas City
because
they didn't, you know, file the right paperwork. But it was just, it was really a strange moment in the media room, in the bowels of Paul Brown, like, wait a minute. Who did we sign?
Yes.
Was it the right guy? Where is he from? How do you spell his name? I don't know. I find this amusing.
Yes.
I thought it was a funny moment. It definitely is not worth the 2-week payoff, but, you know.
Yeah, people are a little disappointed.
You know,
I like the story, personally.
I think
I hope you have that email saved.
I do.
I like the idea of the kicker with the four question marks from the actual media team down in Louisville.
Yeah, wow. So maybe that's a little inside baseball, inside scribey, in terms of just
John,
like,
Brown,
what we find amusing.
Dude, John Brown finds it great. He got a year of real estate in an NFL locker room.
Yeah, he did.
Still here.
Yeah,
hanging around.
So that
maybe
was.
We'll actually get to see him kick this year.
Maybe
we'll see. So excellent John Brown story. All right. While you're hot, while you're rolling, let's keep you rolling here. Let's find out. Yeah, I've been sort of prepped for this, that you're I don't know what it is, except that you think it might make me mad.
Well, I'm curious, 'cause
why are you mad?
So I got really mad at Tiger Woods this weekend, Paul. I'm watching these two jokers, Justin Rose and Sergio Garcia, just like choke and high-five their way on Sunday at Augusta, and Sergio. Like, if there was a I'm just so mad at Tiger for, like, breaking himself to subject me to just clowns winning majors since 2008.
Clowns.
And there is no better poster boy than the ghosts of Carnoustie Weiner, Sergio Garcia, winning a major. Like, yeah. I put this out on Twitter because, like, the Tiger era was put on life support when Ernie Els won the Open in 2012, and now it's, like, dead. Tiger's dead. He's dead! Sergio Garcia won him. This man, he was mental jelly, putty, goop, whatever you want to call it. This guy should have never won a major, ever. Like, Tiger destroyed him.
He started winning a lot of big tournaments lately.
I don't care. Whatever. Like, big tournament. It's joke. This is a list of jokers. I'm holding a list of jokers.
There are.
Do you know Jimmy Walker
there,
won a
major? There were some jokers that won when Tiger was still around. Whenever Tiger didn't win, there was some jokers in there.
Jason Duffner, joker.
Why Yang?
Why? That was the last one. That was obviously as Tiger's life was unraveling that week. I mean,
go down your
Darren
list.
Darren Clark, clown. Charles Schwartzel. Adam Scott, you know,
Danny Willett,
you know, Webb Simpson.
Come on.
Graham McDowell.
Somebody's got to win.
Lucas Glover. Exactly. Stuart Sink.
You can't have like 18 Tiger Woodses.
No. And that's why I was hoping Rory would kind of like figure something out. Because I root for greatness in individual sports. Parity is awful in golf. Parity is terrible. This is a list of jokers.
It is a loser. That's fine. No, I think you're being – there's some jokers on there. Some of those guys you're being a little – you're being a little – I agree. Dustin Johnson's the one that screwed you. He's the greatness right now. He couldn't lose.
Although if you were to do a pre-tournament bet on which guy would fall down the stairs, yo, Dustin Johnson.
Here's a theory. No way he actually fell down the stairs. No way.
Jeff Kent fell off his truck, Paul.
Yeah, okay.
Brian Griese tripped over
something
his
happened that he don't want people to know about how he got hurt. Because whenever you're trying to come up with a reason why you're hurt and you don't want people to ask questions, you say you fell down the stairs and hurt something.
Yeah.
That it, Dustin Johnson did something. I'm not saying it was with Paulina Gretzky. I'm just saying Dustin Johnson did something that he doesn't want anybody to know how he actually got hurt because he's embarrassed by it. So he said he fell down the steps, and that's why he missed possibly the greatest opportunity of his life when he's never been playing better going to the Masters. Good on.
Yeah, who did? But anyway, so I give Martin Keimer respect for winning a couple majors. I give Rory and Jordan Spieth. Maybe time will bear out because Tiger's
Jason
run head
Day.
To end. Yeah.
Oh, come on.
He's a good player, but whatever. I don't think.
Wow. Yeah, you're right. That does kind of make me a little mad a little bit. Yeah. But I'm gonna let it go. You know why?
I got mad at Tiger for this. Because he's at 44. He shouldn't be.
Get over it.
He broke himself.
He broke himself 8 years, 9 years ago. It's over.
From
his body was never going to keep up. He couldn't have been as great as he was if he didn't play with the torque that he did. And that's why
I wouldn't be watching Sergio win a major.
Well, you did.
I know.
He out-battled Justin Rose. Justin Rose should have won that. He should have won that. All right. Here's why I'm happy. You know why I'm happy?
Why are you happy?
Because United is finally taken on the chin. It's about damn time that United got what it deserved. Me and United, we go way back before this incident. United and I had a run-in last year that ruined my dinner in New York City that I was supposed to have, a delicious, delightful dinner with all the media in New York, but I instead had to take the late, late flight and miss my 10 a.m. because they gave my seat away an hour before I was supposed to take off.
Yep.
Gave it away. Because why? You know why? You know why? Because they overbooked.
Yep.
Because them and their overbooking philosophy, I was checking in and just under an hour before my flight, hitting the check-in button, come to find out they had just given my ticket away and wouldn't even let me go back there. They said, I'm no longer on this flight because I didn't. They have different rules in every other plane. Every other airline is at least 45 to 30 minutes for the flight. I checked in at like 58. Theirs is an hour.
Yeah.
Ticket, gone. Not hearing it. Gone. So I had to get another United flight that left at like 10 p.m., missed my dinner in New York City. I've been steaming about that for a long time. Now, finally, stock price is down $450 million. This is what you get. So I'm happy about this.
Yeah.
They have deserved this. They ruined my day. Now their company's ruined.
I remember that day. You were sad, Paul.
I was really
sad. I had a later flight, and I remember I'm like, I think that's Paul sitting there looking out the window at an empty tarmac.
Yep. Yep, that was
it. There you were.
I was real sad.
Yeah.
I was so looking forward to New York.
I'm glad you're getting your comeuppance.
I got the early flight. And
United's
everything.
Getting their comeuppance. Yeah.
United getting what they deserve, so good for them. All right. So time to get out of here.
Yeah.
We need a little music. You know, Rock and Roll Hall of Fame induction was this week. A couple of our favorites went in.
Yes.
And I'm not talking about Yes. Right. Tupac, Pearl Jam, Journey.
Yeah.
I feel like one of those three needs to be represented here after their big, which by the way, Dave Letterman, unbelievable induction speech for Pearl Jam, which was like a last second thing.
Yeah.
Snoop telling great stories. He claims that Tupac is the first person that gave him a blunt.
Right, which
there's no way that's true.
No really that's hard true. To believe.
No way that's true. No way that's
nice
true.
Story though.
But you know, he's a showman.
Yeah, he is.
He's a showman. So, you know, this time of year when we start making bold predictions and people are really hammering us on Twitter all the time about, oh, this is how the Bengals feel. I know. My draft rankings say this.
Right.
You don't know. Bengals don't know. You know what we are at this point? We're two of America's most wanted.
We are.
That's what I feel like. That's us.
Yes.
And with Tupac going in the hall and Snoop referenced this.
Yeah.
in his induction speech, you being a Tupac guy, us being in the booth.
Yep. It feels right. It does. It feels right.
That's us. Two of America's most wanted. We're so tough.
Oh, yeah.
Don't mess with us, people.
My cough is hot all the time. You don't even want to know what that means.
All right. So we are out of here. Next week, come on back. We're going to have a couple more special guests for you on the podcast. We're getting closer. Draft almost here. We'll have a draft preview and a draft review coming. We got everything. So keep checking in. And we'll talk to you. Now they got a slate to multi-millionaire young brothers catching cases. Busters get ready for the throwdown. The hits about to go down. Me and Snoop about to clash. I'm losing my religion. I'm vicious on these stool pigeons. You might be deep in this game, but you got the rules missing. Suckers be acting like they savage. I'm out to get the cabbage. I got nothing but love for my homies living life. I got a pit named P, she niggerina. I got a house out in the hills, right next to Chino. And I think I got a black Beamer, but my dream is to own a fly casino like Bugsy Siegel and do it all illegal and get scooped up by the little homie in the Riga. It feels good to you, baby bubba. You see, this is for the G's and the keys, young hustler. Now follow as we ride. You can check the rest. Two of the best from the west side. And I can make you famous. Brothers been dying for years, so how can they blame us? I live in fear of a felony. I never stop felonies.